are able to determine if there is that yes or no, go ahead in the connection, relationship, etc. And and then the others will lead. And then talking about the nuance, also I feel that is a systemic kind of limitation for certain people to say, let's don't go and talk farther down because it will be too complicated. In this case, sometimes for men to understand, we have to simplify it. And if they listen yes, then it's a go ahead. And if they listen no, then they knew that they shouldn't go ahead. And so I also feel that there is a systemic responsibility, right? That is kind of withholding powers. So then people cannot assert or say what they wanted to say because it lands, the responsibility ended up landing in certain people. In this case, I feel that the weight on femme folks is really high. And then we continue talking about who is impacted, but we are not talking about who are creating the impact as well. And then that also makes me think about, we were having a conversation previously with Ira Rishi, who is going to be the facilitator of that conversation that we're going to have, where sometimes also the response to violations of consent are very binary too. Who is guilty and who is not guilty? Who will be punished and who will not, then putting that transformative justice idea on the side, because it's like a, here there is a bad person, a good person, and then we have just to fix it like that. So then it's not only the practice or the notion that we have, but also what are the consequences are quite binary as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Even just thinking about the phrase, you know, I think that when a phrase that kind of floats around is like hurt people, and it just makes me think of like how many survivors of different forms of gender-based violence like end up in prison for also perpetrating different forms of gender-based violence. Like so, like I think I can't remember the statistic off the top of my head, but like the vast majority of women who are in prison are people who have experienced gender-based violence, like are survivors. So yeah, I really appreciate that you brought up that kind of like that end of the binary as well, and how, like, I think that we've talked before about the way that the binary system of yes and no like limits this like expansive view of consent and like different ways that consent can be practiced. But yeah, on that end of it definitely is also very limiting in terms of like how we respond to gender-based violence. And like on that end, like the constellation of like supports and resources that can be offered to both people who have caused harm and people who have had harm caused to them. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Paula. Excellent
Yeah.
insight.
Yes. Yeah, I've been thinking like when we were talking at the beginning, we were talking about negotiation, right? Like we see, okay, what is going to work for you? What is going to work for me? What cues are we going to pay attention in case that, for example, I don't want it to continue doing what we are doing? Can we use a safe word? Like it is a lot of really ne sitting and negotiating, but the yes and no doesn't have any room for negotiations. Or you say yes at the beginning. Now, while you are changing your mind, like you say yes, so then that's yes for me. So then there is kind of like this idea of it's very stiff, the yes and no, right? So then, as you were saying, I wonder if you can share a little bit more about what you were saying at the beginning about the enthusiastic maybe.
Oh yeah. Okay, so like total disclosure. I first heard this context, well, like I see like a person who specializes in like sex therapy. Oh my gosh, like everyone, like I feel so many people should do sex therapy. It's really so amazing. But yeah, like just in the context of like research about like sexual desire, that we have a lot of ideas that there's like high sexual desire, like people who just like want sex all the time, think about sex all the time. And then there's people who have like low sexual desire, and it exists on this spectrum. And it changes all the time, for each individual constantly throughout their life and from day to day. And within that spectrum, there's also this area that's like a maybe area, which is like, I feel if used the wrong way could be incredibly dangerous. But if used with a lot of like negotiation and communication, is this area where like a lot of experimentation can happen. And I think it's like not just within the context of like, are we going to have sex or are we not going to have sex, but also in like, what do we want to try? If we try it, what, like, how do we back out of it? Like that kind of thing. So it's kind of like this area within like desire or like different ways of being in relation with each other intimately, that's kind of this like experimentation zone of like what would happen if, and like being enthusiastic to explore that what if, knowing that you can back out of it. But yeah, again, like there's lots of research on this. I'm not like really well versed in that area. That's just like my understanding of it. But yeah, there's lots of great research out there and is in the book that I'd mentioned earlier, Tomorrow Sex Will Be Good.
What is the title again? You were saying Tomorrow Sex Will Be
Good. Tomorrow Sex. Yeah, Tomorrow Sex Will Be Good Again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think is like a Michel Foucault quote, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Yes. And but, it reminds me that there's some, you know, like the yes, no, maybe list that is used in, you know, like sex positive spaces. And also with like, if you have a relationship with someone or you are exploring or have a sexual connection with someone that you can use, what are your yeses? What are your nos? What are your maybes? That list can change all the time. That list can be updated. And then again, those three are kind of like a dance of negotiation where we can see, okay, can we include this in the maybes? Oh, now we try that. Can we include that in the no's and see how that works? But it also makes me think a little bit when, like, if I think back when I was in my 20s, yes, the notion that I have about engaging in sexual activity was like, I have to say yes, I have to say no, I cannot say I don't feel uncomfortable or anything like that, otherwise I am gonna ruin the mood, or maybe they're not gonna think the best about me, and then you don't enter many connections, especially sexual activity connections, with these openness to say, okay, this is what I really like, this is what I really enjoy, because also, again, going back to gender, is not well seen if you share what is that you like and what you don't like. So then there are so many layers that we can peel on this subject, and I am so excited that we're gonna have that conversation in a couple of weeks, so then we can go and listen more of what the two guest speakers that we are inviting are going to chat and share about consent beyond binaries. But before we continue chatting about these, so we're going to introduce you a song. We're going to listen to this song and then come back and continue our conversation with Chantel. So the next song is from one of my very favorite artists. And I will recommend, if you have Netflix, there are a couple of documentaries about him on Netflix. One is a documentary of his kind of like musical career. And then the other one is just basically a concert. And this is another Brazilian artist. So the name of the song is Não Quero Vingança, which means I don't want revenge. And it's such, I wish I can translate the whole song for you folks, but but I cannot do that right now. But it really talks about sometimes when we're really hurt and in so much pain, and people have failed on our trust and they have breached boundaries. He's saying, yes, all that happened, but in this case, I am not going to choose revenge. So Emicida is a Black Brazilian artist. He's from Sao Paulo. And through his music, he has been trying to reclaim and highlight all the Black Brazilian resistance that is still happening in that land. So 100% recommend that you go and check more about Emicida. So let's listen. Now Quiero Venganza.
Não é fácil a gente se livrar de uma ingratidão, mas dessa, graças a Deus, me livrei.
Pra que a gente transcenda a vingança, pra que a gente mire na justiça, pra que a gente consiga ser maior. Eu só quero dizer que na hora parece um caminho pra todo aquele que sabe de fato sofrer. Você não deve chorar, nem muito menos temer, porque eu não guardo rancor de você. Não quero vingança, eu não. O que você me fez, juro que já perdoei. Não é fácil a gente livrar de uma ingratidão, mas dessa, graças a Deus me livrei. Não quero vingança, eu não. O que você me fez, juro que já perdoei. Não é fácil a gente se livrar de uma ingratidão, mas dessa, graças a Deus me livrei. Eu só quero dizer que na hora parece um caminho pra todo aquele que sabe de fato sofrer. Você não deve chorar, nem muito menos temer, porque eu não guardo rancor de você. Não quero vingança, eu não. O que você me fez, juro que já perdoei. Não é fácil a gente se livrar de uma ingratidão, mas dessa, graças a Deus me livrei. Vingança, eu não. O que você me fez, juro que já perdoei. Não é fácil a gente se livrar de uma ingratidão, mas dessa, graças a Deus me livrei. Mas dessa, graças a Deus me livrei. Mas dessa, graças a Deus me livrei. Mas dessa, graças a Deus me livrei.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Paola. Paola and I just recently did a blended on Spotify, and it's really opened me up to this whole world of music that especially Spanish and Portuguese music that has just been amazing. So thank you for sharing, Paola.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as we get back into the conversation, in an earlier part of the conversation, there was one topic that you had brought up, Paola, which was this idea of power. And consent and how all of that comes into play within the binary of consent. So this is an area of work that I've kind of been looking at specifically within the post-secondary context. So I just wanted to pull on that thread just a little bit. I know that we're short on time, but I think that this is a really important aspect of consent that gets buried under that binary. So in my own work in the anti-violence movement, one area of research and advocacy that I've done is professor perpetrated violence. So professors who have positions of power over students who perpetrate various forms, like the whole gamut of gender-based violence against students. So an aspect of that is obviously power. And the way that that power and privilege undermines or obscures like a more meaningful consent, consensual relationship, and also like myriads of practices of consent. So I just wanted to like really highlight how those relationships that have a power imbalance when one person has the power to influence things like money or a place to live or a job or their reputation or their academic career, the way that that can impact people is actually quite profound. Like you were saying earlier, Paolo, like it really robs people often of the ability to say yes and no in a really meaningful way because of the fear of negative consequences for not consenting. And that when someone abuses power, particularly in the context of like a professor, like abusing power with a student, the way that that actually undermines like education and relationships within the entirety of that department or within like the entire construct of education for that student, it has like really far reaching ramifications. So I just wanted to highlight that so quickly. And if folks are interested in learning more about this kind of like often forgotten about form of violence or like not acknowledged form of violence within post-secondary, you know, so much of this narrative is like student on student violence, thinking of that like binary system again. Students for Consent Culture has a report that is going to be coming out in the first part of the new year called the Open Secrets Project. You can find it on their website. There's a preliminary summary. So if that's something that you're interested in learning more about, I encourage folks to unpack some of that as well.
And when we were talking about power, when you were talking about power, it reminds me also that sometimes power can be, take advantage, for example, of cultural context. There are so many students, international students, that come here. They come to SFU, and then there are different understandings of consent on different cultures. So definitely consent is also culturally specific. So assuming that others will understand consent exactly as we do, really limits the notion of how we can interact in a healthier way with other individuals. Because in certain cultures, sometimes that idea of saying no, even though the person wanted to say no, sometimes is not well seen, right? And then certain people are not able to lose face or, you know, present themselves as assertive because that is not well seen in their cultures. And sometimes power can abuse on that type of, you know, dynamics of culture. And then the other thing that makes me think about, you know, like power and culture is... So also the many times we cannot even think in certain lands or in certain areas, maybe we cannot even think about consent because, you know, the influence of colonialism and patriarchy that is kind of like ongoing happening in other lands. So if someone sits down and start to think, oh, was that consensual or not, or did I give consent to this or not? Then I don't think that many people will be able to continue even living because it will be too much. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing up that, that like context of like colonialism and patriarchy as well. Because I think in like our conversation that we've been having so far, it's been a lot of like the interpersonal side of stuff, which is like the most, like often the most direct relationship that we have with consent. But there's also these like larger structures that are obviously at play and influence the relationships that we have with consent and the understanding of it. And I think that we just like simply can't talk about consent without also acknowledging and unpacking and like actively addressing the ongoing non-consensual relationship that Canada has with Indigenous communities and nations as well. You know, just thinking about how gender-based violence is a tool or a weapon of colonialism within colonial practices and regimes, thinking about, you know, the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, pandemic, epidemic. It was recently just, you know, made like a national emergency this year by the federal government that they themselves have perpetrated, like it's their own national emergency, as well as the historical loss of status for Indigenous women marrying non-Indigenous men, the ramifications of which are still felt today, and just like the myriad of other ways that Indigenous peoples feel the impact of colonialism. So yeah, it's not just the violation of consent that's important to talk about in that context as well. Just thinking about, you know, we've mentioned before the different ways that consent can exist, and, you know, like the Indigenous landscape of Turtle Island is like rife with different forms and practices of Indigenous consent that have been practiced since time immemorial that offer us like a glimpse into worlds that like are really enlivened with consent. So for instance, thinking about the kind of like version of free, prior and informed consent that's used at the border of Wet'suwet'en Unist'ot'en territories, which is a centuries old practice. And this is a process that honors the consent given by the keepers of this land, permitting you to be on their territory. So when you arrive at the border of their territory, you have to tell them who you are and what it is that you're bringing to that land. And you have to receive like a yes to be able to enter. You also have to say that you're not a police officer or working for the natural gas industry. So yeah, by accepting, by being granted access to the land, you also accept like the rules of the leadership there, and you agree to uphold the autonomy of the land and people and yourself too. And that's just like one entry point into the various ways that Indigenous forms of consent are practiced on the land. Yeah, so with that, I was going to read a poem, but we're running really short on time. I want to give Paolo lots of time to close us off. But I have one more song to share with you folks today, which is a song called The Beat by the singer-songwriter Ella Sappy Isaac, who is an Inuk musician, documentary filmmaker, and activist. She sings in Inuktitut, French and English. She's very talented. And the song that I'm bringing today is, again, The Beat, which is a song about a woman who has experienced different kinds of harm and the different ways, the different paths that she walks to try and heal from that harm, which include music and mountains and relationships and all that. So let's listen to that song.
Okay, thank you, Chantel, for bringing that song. And yes, so we are at the end of the show. So I wanted to thank CJSFM because they always provide an open space for us to share about what is happening at the CFU, what is that we are doing, how our offices are supporting students. So thank you so much. Thank you to Robin that always help us with creating these spaces. And okay, so I guess that all of you were waiting, okay, but tell me more about that event on Consent Beyond Binaries. So that is happening on Tuesday, September 19th from 12:30 to 1:30. So during your lunchtime, you can join us online. You can go to our website, which is just give me a second. I always forget our website. You know, I type it all the time. So it's at www.sfu.ca/sexual-violence. And if you go to the tab that talks about consent matters, so you will have more information in how to register for that event. And so we are going to host this event. It's a conversation with queer non-binary writer, coach, and facilitator Kali Boele Silva, and somatic educator, award-winning speaker, author, and restorative justice advocate, and lesbian Jewish feminist Marlee Lees. So Marlee and Kali are going to share their perspectives on practicing consent, and we'll dive into the complexities that we talked today, or even more, and the limitations of the yes and no binary that we have here in the mainstream conversations about consent. So we just wanted to invite you to let's move beyond this binary to imagine new possibilities and developing mutual agreements and consent and healthy relationships. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that we can continue this conversation. You can follow us on Instagram at sfu.svsbo, and you can follow SF Berg at sfuprg on Instagram. So thank you so much, and we hope that you have an amazing Wednesday.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m.